You are listening to The Pulse, Rod Murray's e-learning tech podcast, number 146.
Hi, this is Rod Murray. Glad to be back. I don't know about you, but I'm a fan of New Age piano, and I really like that clip. That was from Lines Build Walls by Aaron Starks. As usual, I'll play the full piece at the end of my podcast. This podcast is sponsored by Inside Higher Ed, the online source for news, opinion, and jobs for all of higher education. I also invite you to follow me on Twitter. My handle is RodsPods. As always, I post links to all of the things we talk about on my show notes at www.rodspulsepodcast.com. Well, I had a very interesting discussion with Dr. Randy Swearer. He's the new VP of Education Experiences at Autodesk. If you're like me, you may not connect Autodesk necessarily with education unless you work in design disciplines such as architecture, clothing design. It makes sense for Randy to be with Autodesk. He was the former provost for a number of years at one of our peer institutions here in Philadelphia, Philadelphia University, which used to be called the Philadelphia College of Textiles and Science. So we had a wide-ranging discussion. It was definitely not a sales pitch, although I was very pleased to learn that all Autodesk software is now free for faculty and students. That's quite impressive. We talked about a number of things, how design thinking applies to non-design careers, disruptions to traditional learning institutions, the rise of micro-credentialing, badging, preparing students for jobs of the future, the classroom of the future, peer learning, 3D printing. And we even talked about Ted Nelson, who was way ahead of his time. He coined hypertext, I think, back in the 60s. And Autodesk actually had a role in trying to produce Ted Nelson's software at the time, which was called Project Xanadu. I think that was back in the early 80s. So anyway, without further ado, here's my, I think you'll find, very interesting and stimulating discussion with Dr. Randy Swearer. Randy, thank you so much for taking some time to talk to me and my audience today. I've been very interested to hear about your story and Autodesk's story.
Hey, it's absolutely a pleasure to be here, and I'm looking forward to it too.
When I first heard about Autodesk and your position there, I was thinking, you know, I really don't know much about Autodesk, at least in my realm. You know, I've been at a health science institutions for quite some time. So Autodesk and education, besides CAD software, really hasn't piqued my interest. But so tell me a little bit about how Autodesk is interested in spreading the word in education.
There's a couple answers to that, but we have a huge footprint, actually, and a huge stake in education, and not only higher ed, but in secondary as well. I mean, we're like 800,000 high schools, middle schools, and universities around the world. It's massive.
I had no idea.
Yeah, and our software is accessed by like 680 million students. So it is, the scale of this thing is huge. And it's, yeah, I mean, everyone thinks about AutoCAD, right? When they think about Autodesk. In fact, you know, for my first week here, I kept, you know, mispronouncing Autodesk as AutoCAD. My boss kept saying to me, hey, stop it. You got to call it Autodesk. But look, anything around you that's been kind of probably made in the last quarter of a century, be it a building, a product, a film, has probably been touched in some way, if not made by an Autodesk tool. So, you know, Avatar, right? All special effects for Avatar. We just bought a game engine. We're really, really interested in all different aspects of the architecture, manufacturing, and construction space, product design. And increasingly, we're driving really hard into cloud-based products that foster collaboration. So we have a massive stake in this space. And we also deeply believe, and this is something that, you know, it's hard. It's really hard when you're outside of a company to kind of hear these taglines, because it's kind of like, oh, another corporate tagline. But at Autodesk, we talk about imagine, design, and create another world, a better world. But people here really kind of live and breathe that, and it really means something to them. So a big part of imagining, designing, and creating a better world is affecting students and faculty so that they can do that, you know, so that they can use our tools in order to make the world a better place. So, you know, we drive lots of the better world part of that statement. We drive lots of work there through our foundation, sustainability. Our foundation is the only foundation I know of in the world that is totally focused on design-driven impact, social impact. And then we also deeply believe in just simply the relationship between making and learning, right? Mm-hmm. Which I think is becoming a big deal out there in the world. So make, learn, we have a huge footprint, and we want to make sure we continue to understand what that means. And the make, learn piece, you know, we really deeply believe that this is having an effect out there in the world, and the make, learn relationship and all the pedagogies around that will become even more important in the future.
I imagine that makerspaces, your software must be in just about every makerspace, I would guess. That's one thing we don't have here yet at my institution, U Sciences. But I could imagine in...
Let's talk.
Yeah, right. I could imagine that occupational therapy, maybe physical therapy, there'd be applications for designing custom devices, you know, and designing that sort of thing. So, maybe we can stir up some interest here.
Yeah, no, look, you know, I just tell you a couple things. We do a lot of work right now with colleges and universities around prosthetics and prosthetic design with some of our new cloud-based tools like our Fusion tool, which is incredibly easy to use and powerful because it's all cloud-based. And people are using these tools to design a new generation of prosthetics that are cheap. They're more easily manufacturable, and they can be created in many different corners of the world that they couldn't be before. Another thought on this, you know, when you're talking about occupational therapy and so on, is we just sponsored a class down at Stanford in 3D printing for what is called 3D printing for non-majors, meaning non-engineers.
Very cool.
And you know who's the primary people who are taking courses, or taking that class, is nurses.
How about that?
Yeah, nurses, you know, they're kind of on the cutting edge.
Yes, they are.
And they're constantly trying to improvise and visualize solutions. And so it's become an incredibly popular and powerful class down there.
You know, I was looking at your website, and I saw that you have free software available for education. Can you tell me a little bit more about that and which software and how that works?
So I just want to say, look, on one level, it was an easy decision for the company, but I also just want to describe the magnitude of this decision, because you're talking hundreds of millions of dollars of revenue, and the company just felt this is so important to get it in the hands of students and faculty, we're going to just forego that revenue.
Wow.
So about 3 years ago, we made the decision to go completely free. And I just want to emphasize here, because we're really proud of it, every product we make, everything, and that's over 100 products, every product we make is totally free, unlimited licenses to students and faculty, no strings attached.
Wow. That is amazing. That is really cool. You know, we don't have... a great budget here for just about anything these days. It's, as you know, in higher ed, especially, you know, with the changing demographics, there are really budget pressures everywhere. So free is good. And I would love to have a makerspace and let our folks in some of our programs experiment with 3D printing. In fact, I ordered a small device recently that actually uses a smartphone to actually, I forget what it's called now, Olo or...
Oh, yeah, I know exactly.
You know what I'm talking about?
We had them in here a couple months ago. Yeah, we had them in here. We just thought this was so cool. I mean, what happens when you put a 3D printer in the hands of like millions of people? We said, we just have to meet these guys. I didn't realize that they were on the market.
Well, I think it's still in development. I think it was a Kickstarter project.
And, it was a
So I, you know, I've invested in a couple of different Kickstarter projects. That was one of them. I haven't seen that one yet, though.
I think this is a game changer. I really do, because you all of a sudden you're taking one of the things we talk about a lot at Autodesk is democratizing design and tools, and trying to make it so that it's not only a experienced industrial designer or engineer who can use these things, but that same tool can be used at various levels with a 15, 16-year-old to make cool stuff. Well, when you start to begin to think about low-cost 3D printing, something like this with a smartphone, the amount of creativity that's going to be unleashed out there in the world, I mean, it's spectacular to think about what could happen.
Yes, you know, just coincidentally, I watched a brand new TED Talk talking about the next revolution in manufacturing, which is going to turn around our economy. And mm-hmm. basically what he was talking about is, you know, moving these, you know, mass-produced factories that we have to go overseas for to smaller sort of, you know, 3D printed products right here in the local cities and neighborhoods. So this fits right in.
It's a new industrial revolution. You can't overplay how important this is. The industrial revolution is returning to the United States, but in a vastly different form, with 3D printing, additive, subtractive manufacturing, what we call advanced manufacturing. It's really going to change the game. And this is about radical specialization and customization, being able to meet the needs of consumers, personalize things in ways that you could never do before, and create like manufacturing runs of one and still have it be economical. So I do think that additive, subtractive, what we call 3D printing additive, is going to be a real game changer in terms of our economy in the coming couple decades. Autodesk is right there. I mean, we're all over this thing right now, looking at the issue of advanced manufacturing, how our tools can sync up with that.
Speaking of preparing students for jobs of the future, that's certainly where it is.
Yeah.
How about the classroom of the future? You know, I got a flavor for what Philadelphia University was doing with their collaborative classrooms. What insight do you have about that?
This is the way I look at classrooms. Yeah, first of all, the whole learning lab thing that was going on at Philadelphia University, that began when I was there. We went up to Steelcase Corporation and looked at some of the ways that they're thinking about reimagining what active learning looks like in classrooms. And based on that, we got a little grant and we built on that and created this string of those learning labs. But okay, so a learning lab is a physical place. It's also a place where students can share things digitally, of course, and access all these multiple channels of digital information, bring them into the class to enrich learning. But I think the classroom itself is something you've got to call into question in the future, right? So I think there's going to be a real blurring between the traditional classroom, for example, and makerspaces. You talked about like creating a makerspace. I think that, you know, 15, 20 years from now, I think classrooms are going to be many different flavors, not universally so, but many classrooms will be many different flavors of makerspaces. Because making and learning is becoming such a powerful pedagogy, not just in secondary schools, but also at colleges and universities throughout the world.
We put a lot of effort into classroom technology here. And when I first arrived here at U Sciences about 8 years ago, they didn't have lecture capture, for example. So we've instituted, you know, just about every classroom has lecture capture, but now we're getting away from lecture. We want to do more activities in the class. We want to flip the classroom. And so not that you can't use some of that technology to extend it, but this is certainly the way things are going.
But it's funny how it's evolved so quickly, right?
Yes. Oh, yes.
I mean, it's amazing. You talk about putting lecture capture in classrooms and the disruption that's occurring right now in higher ed. It's just creating changes so quickly, so radically. And I think in many ways that's good. There's a lot of creativity out there now in the higher ed space that there wasn't 15, 20 years ago. What it does mean, for people like you and others, it's challenging to kind of, you know, keep up and continually be integrating technology with some of these new ways of teaching and learning. So I feel for you.
Yes. You know, exactly. It used to be at my former institution, you know, you're lucky to get a capital budget. And so it was usually you had some excess money and you would buy a classroom full of PCs and hope that they would last for 5 or 6 years. But now you can't. You have to work you know, that kind of technology into your operating budget so that you can continually improve the classroom situation.
I know, and it's just becoming that integration of technology with learning and the sort of culture of the classroom, that's only going to become more interesting, I should say, probably, and more challenging in the coming years as all of this stuff begins to accelerate. And frankly, merge with other channels of learning. You know, what's really exciting in my group is that I'm just trying to bring this back a little bit to making and learning. There's a website, an organization that Autodesk purchased about 5 years ago called Instructables. And you should check it out. It's kind of an amazing place where millions of people just teach each other informally in a peer learning format, right? About how to make things.
Uh-huh.
So it's about making and learning through community, peer-to-peer based learning. And, you know, it's moving into my group. I think we're going to announce it tomorrow, actually. But in a way, you look at the classroom of the future, and Instructables represents part of that classroom. It's a virtual classroom, but it's a peer-driven, community-based classroom. It could have a physical counterpart, or it could be completely online. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, I think that's a really interesting part about where all this is going, to those blended channels.
Yes, exactly. In fact, speaking of peer-to-peer instruction, whenever I have the opportunity, I like to mention software that we use here that enables that. It's called Apprennet. I'm not sure if you're familiar with it.
No, what's it called?
The Apprennet. They actually changed the name of the company to Practice.
Huh.
And Apprennet, I'll certainly have links to it on my show notes, but it's a way to pose a video challenge. The students watch the challenge. They come back with their response in video, post their own video, and then they get to view all their peers' videos.
Very
before
cool.
Eventually they are, you know, see the experts' solution to the challenge. And they've merged with a company that was going to be called Hands Free, and it was a way that you could use audio to control your camera when you were, you know, instructing somebody how to do something. So it's just really great technology for peer learning. I always like to get that in.
I love that. I think that's brilliant. I love it.
In looking at your website in preparation for our talk today, I see a lot about design thinking.
Yeah.
And of course, we're at a science institution here. You know, my listeners are, you know, from all kinds of institutions, but, you know, pharmacy is our largest cohort of students. And of course, we have the other occupational therapy, physical therapy, physician assistant program here. How does design thinking apply to careers that we generally don't think in terms of design? I know you came from Philadelphia University, which had an amazing history in terms of design. But how do you apply design thinking to other disciplines?
I think design thinking is a platform for innovation, right? So I think it can be used, and I see it used, especially in the position I'm in now. I have this vantage point where I see design thinking used in a variety of disciplines and professions that span. Sometimes they're transdisciplinary, sometimes they span disciplines, but they're certainly not relegated to those traditional making disciplines that where you'd think of sort of product design or architecture or even engineering. You know, I mentioned earlier that 3D printing class that we're sponsoring down at Stanford, essentially for nursing students. And what's really at the center of that class is not so much learning how to make stuff, right? I mean, that's an important part of it. But what excites us is that people are using our tools to think differently about innovating and doing what they do in the world in more effective, efficient, experimental ways, really kind of reframing what's around them in order to do a better job, either through learning or through their professional activity. So, you know, what are the essential components of design thinking? First of all, framing problems, right? So you try to understand from a user's point of view, from a community point of view, if you're trying to address a particular person or subgroup or culture, really trying to understand the problem from their perspective. And then developing some models and prototypes to test whether or not your hypothesis about what might work or what might not work based on your empathy with that user group. And then you look at those prototypes and you iterate and continue to test until you come up with something that really satisfies the challenge that's in front of you. And that process is not a process that can or should be limited to the making professions. That's why, you know, even design thinking, we use it a lot here too, but it kind of limits the scope, the label. It's really a framework, a mental framework for innovating.
Yep, that makes sense. Something, you know, what you're saying just now triggered a recollection of mine that has to do with Autodesk. And in, I forget what year it was, but are you familiar with Ted Nelson?
Yeah.
And the Xanadu project?
Not the Xanadu project, no.
Well, the Xanadu, you know, this is goes way back, but I'll have to have some links in my show notes. But Ted Nelson was way ahead of his time. He coined the term hypertext, which basically became what everybody takes for granted now in the World Wide Web.
Right.
But he had a much finer, granular system that he had designed or planned that would any link that you were following would somehow lead back to the owner of that content, and there'd be one sort of source of truth for that, and it would also allow the economics of actually paying, you know, micro currency to the owner of that content. And this was all summed up in his Xanadu project, and actually Autodesk put $10 million, I think, into trying to actually produce the Xanadu software, and eventually gave up because it was such a I don't think we just didn't have the computing power back then. This goes back quite some time. So yeah, I'd be interested. It's an interesting bit of history from Autodesk. Look up the Xanadu product.
I will. I've never heard that before. That's fascinating. I mean, Nelson was way ahead of his time, and an amazing figure too. Yeah.
You know, something else that I've been thinking about with regard to the future of education, certainly disrupting education, we see it all the time now, and it seems that more and more you see in the news how there's a lot of money being put into e-learning technologies. It used to be, you know, disrupting the financial industry, and that's still ongoing, disrupting different industry. But so do you see Autodesk as helping to disrupt traditional learning?
So the way I look at that is we want to understand what those disruptions are going on out there in the world, which is one of the reasons why I think I was hired, and understand how we can add value given the disruptions. And it kind of comes back to what we were talking about earlier with a kind of, you know, unbundling of the rigid boundaries around the university and creating more kind of porosity between what happens inside the university, what happens outside the university. So how can we contribute as a company to driving things like innovation and design thinking and getting students ready for the workforce of tomorrow, frankly, for a career that's going to constantly be morphing throughout their entire lives? And there are things like micro-credentialing that I think could be extremely, and are actually extremely powerful, ways of kind of blurring those boundaries. So as you know, stackable credentials or micro-credentials are ways of certifying sort of particular kinds of learning outcomes that could be very skill-based. I mean, it kind of started in the software industry, but they can also be built around ideas like critical thinking, innovation, design thinking. So we're very interested in how can we contribute to a kind of system maybe of micro-credentialing that expands from college all the way into a student's career and throughout their career. And I really think that this is sort of the future of where things are going. So we're beginning to experiment now on our Design Academy website, which, by the way, is for your listeners, is kind of a cool place to go. It's a place where you can kind of see. It's our interface with the education community. We've got courses and projects, and we've got a number of MOOCs on there right now that we're experimenting with. But we also want to dive deeply into micro-credentialing and badging on that platform as a way of, again, creating that kind of flow of learning that goes from college and beyond. And who knows, maybe even goes from high school to college and beyond.
Now, is that the Design Academy? Is that delivered on iTunes U?
No. That's a separate. That? It's a separate. No, we do. Yeah, you saw the stuff that we have on iTunes U. We have a lot of content on there too. But Design Academy is more of a kind of curated website where we have point of view articles. We have projects that faculty can integrate into classes. If students or faculty or even professionals want to learn our software, we have kind of project-based learning that we drive through that. And then when we see professional communities or student communities even begin to exhibit interest in certain areas, we'll develop really cool content for them to engage with. For example, we noticed with our MOOCs that like 30% of the people who are linking into our MOOCs were coming from Kickstarter. So we started a MOOC in innovation and Fusion, which is one of our cutting edge CAD tools.
Wow, that is so cool. Yeah. I mean, there's so much going on in this area. It's very exciting. I'm sure there's several companies that are getting into this sort of micro credentialing. One of them was had been doing something like that for years in the military because, their soldiers come back and they have tons of experience, in many different areas, but how do they work that into a degree? And so having some system which enables people to, piece together their real life experience with, a course taken here, a course taken there, and work this all into getting a degree, I think is a fantastic idea.
I do too. You know, there's another step. I've been talking with some people in my group about an idea that is still an idea, all right, but it's something that we talk about called generative learning. And generative learning, I'll use the micro-credentialing kind of metaphor of a way of talking about it, but it's very much just a concept. But instead of having static micro-credentials where you just sort of, you learn something, you're able to document, improve the learning, and then you get the micro-credential, generative learning envisions a system, for example, where you're co-creating learning pathways with intelligent computer systems so that each micro-credential actually becomes an agent communicating with other micro-credentials in a system. And together, when you have like millions of students who would be moving through this system of micro-credentials, the micro-credentials are actually able to sense where things are going. They're able to sense the emergence of new professions maybe before we even are consciously able to label them. Right?
It's very interesting. Yeah, we're really getting out there
absolutely.
Now.
Why not think about the force of logic, where this stuff might go someday?
Do you have any closing remarks about something we should look for in the future coming from Autodesk?
Oh, yeah.
Not that you haven't already mentioned a lot of it, but...
I would just say that the watchword for us is democratization. You know, when I see what's happening with some of our tools like Fusion, where you have high school students or even middle school students who are 13 and 14 developing new kinds of wheelchairs and medical devices and really changing the world because they can, because the tools are easy enough to use. And those same tools then can be used by students in college and in graduate school. So there's a continuum of use that democratizes across disciplines and across age ranges. That's when we're going to start to see the real cool, innovative stuff happening and accelerating even more than it is now. So I would say democratization.
This has been such a fun discussion. I'm sure we could go on and on, but... thanks again for spending time with me today.
Hey, it was such a pleasure. I really, really enjoyed it.
Well, that's it for this episode. I hope you enjoyed it. Please look for the links for some of the things we discussed on my show notes. And stay tuned for some new age piano, Lines Build Walls by Aaron Starks. Until next time, have a great week.
That's it for today's episode. Thank you very much for listening. Don't forget to give Rod feedback. You can leave comments on his blog or send email to rod@rodspulsepodcast.com. The preceding audio commentary is the product of the author, Dr. Rodney Murray, and does not represent the official viewpoint of the University of the Sciences or any other institution or company.